This is XTP Media.
He said, would you like to have a fly? And I said, no, sir. And he said, you have control. And I was like, yes, sir. Yeah. And there's famous people who I've looked up to for years who will say, oh, I read that all the time. I love your forum, you know. A lot of the air show stars, and it's very humbling. Every time it just sort of brings a lump to my throat. I mean, meeting him was like meeting the last guy from the Charge of the Light Brigade.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. Ready for takeoff. So, here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to Aerospace Radio Station, Extended. Today, we talk aviation in New Zealand with Dave Homewood, producer of the excellent Wings Over New Zealand podcast. With some of the best warbird restorations, we talk to Dave about how New Zealand seems to break all the rules on its size and impact in the aviation sector. And in particular, Dave's work recording for history, both British and other Commonwealth stories from World War II and beyond. So, with everything from the dam busters to top dressing, whatever that is, let's get on and talk to Dave Homewood. Dave, welcome to Extended.
Thank you, Peter.
Well, Dave, Wings Over New Zealand. I want to come back and talk a little bit about the podcast in a minute because it's turning out to be one of my faves at the moment. But tell me about your background in aviation. Where did this all start? Where's this interest come from?
I kind of grew up with it because my dad was an aviation nut, a huge av geek, as we say.
Yeah.
He grew up himself opposite Ardmore Airport, which then was Royal New Zealand Air Force Station Ardmore, and it had Corsairs and Kitty Hawks flying there, and Mustangs and things like that. So he lived literally across the road.
Yeah.
And he grew up with aviation. He was a modeler. He ended up running model clubs and model companies. He had his own model company with aircraft and boat stuff. And so it was all around when I was growing up. And the people, because Dad ran the local model aero club, there was always aviation people coming over every Sunday after they'd been flying. They'd turn up at our place for cups of tea and stuff like that. And you know, there's always magazines around. And there's always when we got our first VHS recorder, Dad was always getting videos from various places of air shows around the world. And I just got completely immersed in it. And then when I turned 18, I joined the Air Force. So
right.
It kind of just seemed a natural thing to join the Air Force. So, but that's where I really got into the history properly. I mean, I had been a modeler and I'd been interested in aircraft and I'd been to a couple of air shows and things like that. I mean, in those days, there weren't that many air shows around these parts. And they were quite small affairs. But when I was in the Air Force, I got based at Christchurch for a couple of years, and at Wigram is the name of the base, and at Wigram is the Air Force Museum of New Zealand. And I used to go down there every weekend and go and potter around, have a look around, talk to the guides who were all World War II guys in those days.
Yeah.
They're all the volunteers there, and I used to just go down there and listen to the stories, and I'd buy books in their shop. And the souvenir shop sort of thing, and you know, have a pie and something for lunch, and you know, I just loved it. I just got completely immersed in it. And then I left the Air Force.
Dave, what was your role in the Air Force? What did you get to do? Were you able to, I suppose, embellish your aviation interests while you were serving?
Yep. I was in a technical trade, ground trade, called safety and surface worker in those days. I think they call it safety and surface technician these days to make it sound a bit less. the safety and surface worker was something that no other Air Force has, because what our Air Force did after World War II is all of the mechanical trades in terms of engines and airframes and all sorts of hands-on metalwork type stuff, they all got put into one trade called aircraft technician. All of the instruments and electronic stuff all got put into another trade called avionics, and they sort of squeezed them all into these two trades. And everything that was left over of the technical trades, apart from armor, that the armorers kept on being armorers, but everything else that was left became safety and surface.
Yeah.
And so within my trade, we had we packed parachutes, we packed life rafts, we looked after all the safety and survival kits and flying clothing, helmets. We looked after things like, various things on aircraft, like transparencies and...
And what sort of aircraft are we talking about here, Dave? What sort of aircraft were in the Royal New Zealand Air Force inventory at the time?
At that time, we had transport wing had... Hercules, five Hercules, which they're still in the Air Force now. They're probably the oldest ones in the world.
Same airframes? 50...
Yeah, yeah. Wow. We've had them for about 55 years. they're the original C-130Hs. And, wow. And we had six Orions, which are still flying, and they're over 50 years old. And we had Andovers then. We had 10 Andovers, which are... Now long gone. We had Iroquois helicopters, which are gone now, Sioux helicopters, a couple of Boeing 727s, and of course we had the air trainers as our main training aircraft.
Yeah.
The air trainer was New Zealand designed and built, so you didn't really see many of them. You wouldn't probably know what they were, but I'm sure if you go around the air clubs or various airfields in Britain, you would have seen air tourers.
Yeah.
And the air tourer was kind of the granddaddy of the air trainer. The air trainer was very similar to look at, but it's actually very different in terms of how it was structured, because it's built for military service.
Right.
We had them. And then, of course, we had the strike wing, which in those days was Skyhawks, and we had when I first joined up, we had the Strike Masters as the trainers.
Yeah,
and they got replaced while I was in with the Air Mackie 339.
Yeah,
339C, I think it was. We just called them the Mackies.
Yeah. And did you get any chances to do any flying when you were serving?
Yeah, I did a little bit of passenger flying, but. Yeah. The only hands-on flying I got to do was the Air Force has got a Tiger Moth in its historic flight, and I did get a fly in that one day with some – I think he's a wing commander. I'd never met him before. I'd never even got his name, and he took me up in this thing, and he said, "Would you like to have a fly?" And I said, "No, sir." And he said, "You have control." And I was like, "Yes, sir." And he talked me through some of the aerobatics. We did a couple of loops and rolls with me in control, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting it whatsoever, and I was terrified that I was going to crash the damn thing. But
well, I've been lucky enough to fly a Tiger Moth as well. We're all going back a bit here, but can you remember flying it? Because I found the Tiger Moth slightly challenging to fly, actually, keeping it straight and level and that sort of thing. It was a lot trickier than you know, your general GA training aircraft.
Well, I have to say, I had never flown anything in my life up until that point, and I actually thought it was a doddle.
Okay. You're a natural.
This is easier than I was expecting.
Oh, well, there you go. You're a natural, Dave. You're a natural.
Yeah, well, I haven't actually done much flying since then either, really. I mean, I haven't done anything proper, but yeah. I mean, I've never gone for a training or license or anything like that. I just like to go along for rides, and I just like standing on the ground and looking at airplanes most. You know?
Yeah.
If I manage to get a ride, I'm stoked, because that's something even better, you know. But I don't know, I'll probably never become a pilot.
No, well, those days are over for me as well, Dave, so let's quickly move on over that embarrassing moment then for me. Tell us about the Wings Over New Zealand, the aviation forum then, that I suppose has led to the podcast that you produce. How's that all come about? What is it, where is it, and who's involved?
Well, okay, that starts back in about 2003. As I said, I got out of the Air Force, and I didn't really do anything much in aviation apart from make a few models. And then one day I was in the library here in town, and I picked up there's a couple of books that were written by Errol Martin, and at the time I didn't know who he was, but he's a good friend now. And he basically went through and wrote these books on all of the people in the Air Force who have died during their service and what the circumstances were. It's a really good reference book and a very sad book. But I was just flicking through it, and I stopped on a page and I saw Cambridge. Now, I'm from Cambridge.
Yeah.
Cambridge is a small town. You know, well, we're 20,000 people now, but back during the war, there was only 5,000 people.
And just context, Dave, whereabouts is Cambridge?
Cambridge is in the North Island. It's, if you know where Auckland is, we're about an hour and a half drive south of Auckland.
Okay.
Or maybe 2 hours south, of depending on traffic. But so we're in the best part of the country.
Of course.
Because you're only an hour and a half to Auckland, or you've got an hour each way, you've got beautiful beaches, or another hour south, and you've got Lake Taupo, and so we're right in it. I was looking at it and I saw Cambridge, and there's a guy who got killed here in an Air Force depot, which I never knew anything about. And so I went across the road to the museum, and I said, what's this about an Air Force depot in Cambridge during the war? And the curator who I knew there, she said, oh, look, you're going to have to go through the newspapers because I haven't got the details. And I started going through the wartime newspapers, and I soon realized that there was a lot of interesting stories of Cambridge people who joined the Air Force during the war, and nobody sort of remembered them at all.
Yeah.
And I began to realize too that the cenotaph in town has a lot of names on them that were actually Air Force people. And I'd grown up here and always assumed they were all Army. You know, that's what everyone says, they're the soldiers.
Yeah.
Well, at least half of them are actually Air Force. So I started collecting these stories together, and that became a website. At the time, I was learning how to make websites, so I decided to make a website, and that's Wings Over Cambridge, and that's dedicated to the stories of men and women from Cambridge who have served in the Air Force. And I went around at the time. It wasn't just people who were killed. I went around and found a load of veterans who were still alive and got their stories recorded, and that's the beginning of it all. And that went online in 2004, and by 2005, February 2005, I started to get lots of emails from people who had found my website when they're Googling. And it turns out there's a lot of people interested in their grandfathers and their uncles and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they all kept asking me the same questions about the wartime Air Force, and I kept sending the same answers out, but it's different people. And I just thought, we need one place where everyone can ask a question and everyone else can see the answer.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, a forum. I was a member of a couple of forums at the time, the Flypass Forum and the Wix Forum, and I thought, we need a New Zealand forum. So I created it, and it was then called Wings Over Cambridge Forum because it was part of the website. And I think it was that for about 2 years, until it just started to grow. All of a sudden, it just grew and grew as word started to spread. And so I changed the name to Wings Over New Zealand. And it's now the biggest New Zealand aviation site online of any sort.
We've got
over 5,500 members.
Yep.
But I know we have a lot more people who are not members who read it every day, because I've met a lot of them over the years. That started in 2005, so it's been going for 13 and a bit years.
Yeah.
Which seems astounding, because at the time I honestly had like two boards on there. There was one board that was wartime RNZF, and the other one was just general questions.
Yeah.
And it's now expanded out to cover every aspect of our Air Force, that also the Army, the Navy. It's got general aviation or civil aviation. It's got a special board just for agricultural aviation, because there's a lot of – I didn't even know this until I started the forum. There's a lot of people who are really dedicated to top dressing and crop dusting and all that kind of thing. They follow them. There's a gliding board. There's things like media boards, things like movies, you know, anything that comes out in books or anything like that. So it just covers the whole range of aviation now. And what it's done, without me ever intending to do it, but it's fantastic that it's happened, is it's organically turned into a sort of hub of New Zealand aviation.
Yeah.
Because what's happened is people from Warbirds and people from Aero Clubs and people from top dressing companies and people from museums, they all come together at this one place. And the people who would never have come together in any normal circumstances, they would never have met each other, would never have discussed different topics, and everybody's learning off each other. And it's kind of weird, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's now got to the point where I've sort of become very well known because of it in the aviation scene. So anywhere I go, they're like, oh, yeah, I know your forum. I follow it all the time, you know. And there's
famous.
There's famous people who I've looked up to for years who will say, oh, I read that all the time. I love your forum, you know. A lot of the air show stars and, you know, well-known aviation identities and that, and it's very humbling. It every time it just sort of brings a lump to my throat and sort of gobsmacks me, but it's just so cool.
Sorry to interrupt you there. There's a key reason, I think, and I've come late to your group and to your program probably. And in the early days, I was a little, that's New Zealand, you know, it's not for me, it's of interest, but it doesn't really connect. But what I've actually found, Dave, is there is so much on there that is, and I don't know how else to describe it other than international, particularly linked to my country and my history and the Second World War, that actually it's not just about New Zealand, is it?
No, you're absolutely right. It's universal, really. One of the things that surprised me the most, back in 2007, after the forum had only been going for 2 years, I was at an air show at a marker, and it was after the air show had finished, everybody goes to the bar and has a couple of beers. And I was talking with Dave McDonald from Classic Wings magazine, and he introduced me to two people. One of them was from France and one was from Germany. And when Dave mentioned my name, they both go, oh, yeah, we read your forum. And I just went, what? What? Hang on. People outside of New Zealand read it? I didn't realize that. I thought, you know, there was a couple of Aussies on the forum, but
yeah.
I now realize that there's people all around the world. Like there are regular contributors from Australia, all over Australia, the USA, Britain, you know, all the countries you expect, Canada, and a lot of them are expat Kiwis, but there's a lot of people that aren't. Mm. But there also, there's people in the places you'd never think of, like Hong Kong and Scandinavia and Germany and France. It's brilliant because there's people who regularly read it all around the world. And that's one of the things I always try and get across to other members. When they start posting stuff, it's just like, hey, you don't know who's reading this. You know, you might be criticizing someone. Well, everybody's reading this page, you know, and that's another thing about the forum, which I think has made it such a special place, is that we're actually really friendly. We're actually we've probably, of all the forums I've been on, not just aviation forums, but but any sort of forum, we have the least number of arguments and argy-bargy. It's just incredible. And it's not – I mean, I kind of take a firm hand every now and then, but it's not really because we're whipping people all the time like some forums are. It's not that. It's just that we're actually just a friendly bunch of people and nobody really wants to make trouble. It's a sharing place. It's a place where everybody goes to, keep the keep the information – that they know into the public arena. So they like to share photos. Yeah, they like to share. Yeah. There's a lot of history on there. There's a huge archive of history and photographs on that forum now after 13 years of people. And the really, really cool thing now is anybody can come on there and ask a question, and not only will they get an answer, but usually from someone who was there, because New Zealand's a fairly small place. And so, you know, someone will go, oh, yeah, I was there. Here's the photos, you know. So
yeah,
it's amazing.
And Dave, not content enough with setting up the forum and the amazing place that that's become, you decided then to go on and produce a podcast. And as we talk today, you released episode 180.
You make that sound like a dart score.
I know. For those in the Commonwealth, they'll recognise that little intonation. But for our American friends, that's how darts are announced in a scoring.
Yeah, well, that too was something that kind of just fell into place. I actually started listening to podcasts that I was getting off the BBC. And really, it was just programs that they'd played, but at the wrong time of day for me. So I was just getting them off, you know, off the internet and listened to them later. And I kind of thought, oh, this is cool. I wonder if there's any aviation podcasts. So I just Googled and I found Warbird Radio. And I started listening to Warbird Radio, got quite hooked. In fact, I downloaded most of their archive and started listening to it. After a while of this, I suddenly thought, you know what? We could do this in New Zealand. Nobody's done this in New Zealand. And so this is 2011. And I thought I was talking to one of my good mates that I have known for years since I was a kid. And he's a big aviation fan too. And I said to him, he's also a very, very bright guy. Technically, he's, you know, a computer programmer, and he's always playing with gadgets and stuff. And I was just chatting to him one night, and I said, oh, it'd be really cool to have our own New Zealand aviation podcast. And he said, oh, yeah. I said, do you listen to podcasts? He's like, no, I don't, but I know what you're talking about. And anyway, the next day he rings me up and he goes, oh, there'll be a parcel arriving for you tomorrow. And I was like, what's that? And he said, oh, I've bought you a recorder. He said, you're going to make this podcast you were talking about. And I was like, oh, okay. That's cool. Thank you. And up until that point, I'd already done several years of interviewing people, because I've interviewed loads and loads of veterans over the years. I think the first one I did was way back in mid-90s. There was just a one-off, and I didn't have a lot of involvement in that. But I started properly in probably about 2006 or 2007 with a tape deck, and I started recording these interviews with just a cassette tape. You know, audio cassette. And then I got into filming veterans as well. And I'd done a lot of that up until that point, but not for anything for release. It was really just to save their stories. And because I was interested.
From across the globe, from the center of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
you set up to record these for posterity, but what you've actually done, predominantly from me through the podcast, is you've recorded stories that would have gone untold, and would be lost in the history of time, as it were. It's an amazing achievement that you've managed to capture some of these stories. Let's go on to talk about some of those. Tell us about some of those early ones.
The podcast itself started off pretty ropey, as most podcasts do. As I said, I'd already done a lot of veteran interviews with people. And also another thing I had been doing, which I haven't mentioned yet with Wings Over New Zealand Forum, is in 2008 I held the first forum meet, which was just a meetup. That was meant to be just a meetup, and it turned into people volunteering to give talks. And so we had ended up with three or four guest speakers at that. And it was so popular that we did it again the next year, and every year now we've been doing them. I arranged to get guest speakers, and I didn't record the first or second one because I didn't even think about it. But since then, I've been recording them. And so those first early podcasts, some of those are recordings from those the earliest sort of recorded forum meets that we had. And also I would pick on people from the forum who I knew from the forum and say, hey, do you want to be a guest? You've got an interesting story. So that's how it all sort of started. And I didn't even use Skype then. I was doing telephone calls, and I was doing face-to-face. So they're not that great in terms of sound quality and that sort of thing, but I've learned a lot over the years. And I have to also say one of the biggest helps along the way has been Grant McHeron, who gave me a lot of advice because he'd been doing it for a while. So, that's pretty cool to have. He's now a co-host with me on the Warbird radio version of Wings Over New Zealand, which is pretty cool. So those early ones, there's quite a mix of different stuff, and it just went from there. And I did a few interviews with Warbird restorers up at Ardmore, and what else have I done? I mean, there's veterans there, there's all sorts. And what I've done from the start is literally just tried to keep it different each time so that it doesn't get too stale. Or I know that not everybody's going to listen to every episode, although there are a couple of nutters who have listened to every episode. I don't mean the nutters. I mean the very dedicated fans.
Well, I got hooked, Dave. I got hooked, and I'll tell you why. Because the Wings Over New Zealand podcast is like a storytelling platform.
Yeah.
And whilst you're recording for history, the stories are amazing. So many from World War II, from pilots, from aircrew, from people who served in particularly the air forces, but not uniquely. And those stories would have gone untold, and particularly those, and I'll use air quotes, British related stories. That's not been done even here, Dave. Right. And you've captured things that have educated us around the world in terms of things we never knew about. But it's not just about the Second World War, is it? You've got some great programs from people who served in Asia, in Vietnam, in Korea. You've got bush pilots, you've got airline pilots. This isn't just an historical storytelling platform, is it?
No, that's right. And, you know, sometimes an episode might be about something that's happening right now. So they're not all historical based, but I love the history. And, you know, some of the ones that have been really interesting to me are the neglected stories, the sort of 1960s through to the 90s or whatever. The ones that, you know, there hasn't been many books written about it. There hasn't been much out there. So, you know, the one today that I released is with a chap called Mick Murray, who was a navigator on Canberra's. And, you know, I released that today. I put out the notices on various Facebook pages, and the first reply that I got was a guy saying, what, the RNZF had Canberras? And I was like, okay. So he didn't know that, you know, and we had them for 11 years, you know. And
And for all those Cold War warriors out there who are interested in Cold War aviation, I guarantee this will be one worth listening to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Kiwis weren't deeply involved in the Cold War like the Brits and Americans and that were.
But it's the aircraft,
well, exactly,
isn't it?
But the thing was, you know, they were actually involved in Malaya, which was, you know, fighting the communists. And so there are a few stories on there. And of course, we've also got, well, there's one Vietnam story on there at the moment from a Vietnam pilot. I hope to get more of those soon. I really need to pull finger and get some of those recorded because there's a few of them still around. John Denton, but he didn't talk about his Vietnam part. I've got one Vietnam pilot on in the archive there at the moment. I hope to get more soon. There's also a couple of interesting ones from some of the pioneer agricultural pilots. Not many countries in the world were doing top dressing. For those who don't know what top dressing is, it's dropping things like superphosphate and other agricultural enhancers for grass and pasture for crops and that. It's a bit different from the crop dusting that the Americans, you know, you see all these stairmen doing it. It's similar but different. Top dressing was invented in New Zealand, but there's two pilots there who flew DC-3s doing that down low in the valleys, you know, dropping massive loads of superphosphate onto the hillsides, and those are great stories. These guys are pioneers, you know.
Do you have a favourite, Dave? Do you have favourites from the programme?
Who
you've interviewed or you feel a real, you know, you really got engaged? Because, I mean, you're very passionate when you interview these guys. You're really engaged with them. Are there any we could maybe point the listeners to you think would be great places to start if they've not listened?
I mean, I've enjoyed every one of them that I've made, and I've always learnt from every one of them. I've come away going, wow, I didn't know that, you know. But some of them that have really stood out to me, Les Munro, the Dambuster pilot, that's a two-part one. It's just, he was astounding. He was just such a great interview guest because he just told stories really well. You know, and he was, I mean, meeting him was like meeting the last guy from the Charge of the Light Brigade sort of thing. You know, it's just, he was just a unique man. Another one that I was really pleased to record and to put his story out was Ron Noyce, who was the bomb aimer. So he's the one who dropped the flares. He was a good friend of mine. He lived about a block from here and he had a great story. He did 30 operations. And then on his 30th, he was shot down over Germany and ended up a prisoner of war. And so his was an interesting one. But there's been, I mean, there's some great people involved today.
There's some great content.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, one of my favorite interviewees that I've had on is a young fella called Bevan Jews. He's a very good friend of mine. He's been on the show a couple of times on the live show, and I think once on the main show. And, you know, he's inspirational. He's flying World War One planes. He's, you know, doing air show displays and his own chipmunk and stuff like that. And, you know, he's only 24. He's been doing this for a few years now. You know, that he's the future of air shows and warbirds in this country, I'm sure of it. And so it's really good to get stories like that as well of the guys coming through. I'll tell you another one that I really, really enjoyed was the Walsh Flying School, talking to the young kids and their instructors. I mean, these are literally like 16, 17-year-olds doing this flying school. It's a 2 or 3 week camp that they learn to fly during the camp. And it's, you know, it was totally inspirational talking to those people. I just came away going, wow.
Yeah, they're the future,
yeah,
aren't they?
Exactly. Yeah. So that sort of thing, I really love doing that.
And some of the forum meets, you know, they're still going on. You're still recording many of the interviews. One that jumped out at me when I looked back through the catalogue that I remembered was Don Sims flying the Skyhawks. And I think one of the things I love about the stories that get told is not only do they have deep history about them, I think the New Zealand humour also creeps through. Some of them can be quite amusing as
definitely. We do have a good sort of dry sense of humour, and particularly some of the veterans that I've interviewed, and not so much with the airmen, but definitely the army guys. God, there's been some real characters. So I've got another series which is separate from Wings Over New Zealand show, which is called Courage and Valour, and that is about
Yeah.
It's about the New Zealanders in Italy during World War II. And I've made 11 episodes, and I've sort of put it on hold at the moment because I just haven't got time to keep on editing it. But some of those old guys that I got to sit down with and record, and almost all of them are dead now, but some of them are such characters. Some of them are just hard case. Every time I listen to it, even when I was editing over and over and over hearing these things, I was just still crack up laughing. Because they were just hard and so matter of fact about things that were happening that were horrific and horrifying, you know, and some of them they'll just make a joke about it. So, but yeah, that there's that real cool character that the World War II generation had, and that sense of humor that got them through. It's just fantastic.
And that comes through very much in some of the stories and some of the episodes that you've produced. They're fantastic. And of course, we'll put links to all of these in the show notes. Dave, 180 was out today. What else you got in the pipeline to come up?
There's a lot of recorded material which I have to find time to edit. I've actually been working on a series for I don't know how many years now that where I've been recording bits and pieces about Kiwis involved with mosquitoes, De Havilland mosquitoes, and that includes air crew and from World War II and after the war, and with people who have been involved in restoring aircraft in museums, and also the people involved in restoring the flying aircraft as well, AFSPECs guys and Glenn Powell's crew. That's meant to come together as a sort of series at some stage, but it just hasn't come to fruition. I've been recording bits here and there, and it's all just sitting there waiting to be done. I've got also one day another series that's going to come out is Fleet Air Arm, Kiwis in the Fleet Air Arm. I've got about 20 I've got about 20 something interviews with those guys.
Come on, Dave, get them. I want to hear them.
So do I, but it's just it's huge. And I found this with Making Courage and Valor. What I did was rather than just the Wings Over New Zealand show is easy because I will interview one or two people sitting there and it's just one interview and I'll put it out sort of thing, you know. but what I want to do with the Fleet Air Arm one is, and with probably the mosquito one and various others, is edited like I have with Courage and Valor, where it's a whole lot of different interviews combined so that they're telling a story together. And that's something that worked really well with Courage and Valor is I sat down individually with all these different guys. There was only one instance where I had more than one of them together, and I had about four of them together. But they all had similar stories, so you can pick out a piece from here and a piece from there, and you put it together, and each one reinforces the other so that it makes the story a bit more compelling, if you know what I mean. It's proper documentary making. And it's not like the normal sort of just one-to-one interview that I usually do with the Wings Over New Zealand show. And I'd like to do that with the Fleet Air Arm one because, you know, there's about six or seven Corsair pilots. There's you know, several guys that flew the Swordfish and Albacore. And there's, you know, there's one guy that has a story because he was shot down over Japan and became a POW. And there's so many different stories. There's the Arctic convoys. There's Mediterranean stuff. There's all sorts going on. There's the Indian Ocean. There's so much there, and of course all their
Dave,
training as well.
I'm very excited, yeah. Very excited. Yeah, can't wait to hear some of that. And you've mentioned a few times things that are going on in New Zealand. I think no longer around the world can it be sort of classed as that quiet little corner where things happen. There's a lot going on in New Zealand, particularly in the warbird sector. You know, air shows are pretty impressive now as well, aren't they?
Well, we've always been a very aviation-minded country and, you know, adopted aviation from very early on. We've always sort of punched above our weight in aviation. Just the rest of the world wasn't noticing, I don't think, until more recently. But, you know, Air New Zealand, it's not a big airline, but it's one of the world's best airlines. They're always winning international awards. That's just one example. We've got as you mentioned, the warbirds, we've got AvSpecs rebuilding Mosquitoes. They're just about to have the third one flying. You know, that's something that everybody in the world, particularly in Britain, said, oh, they'll never fly another Mosquito. Well, we're just about to roll out the third one to fly, you know. And just across the airfield from there is Pioneer Aero. They've got a P-39 there, which there's only two of them flying in the world. So this will be the third. And that should roll out in a couple of months to fly. There's so much else going on around New Zealand at the moment. Excuse me. I've got a cold, by the way, so that's why my voice is on. It's pretty funny. That's why I haven't been putting out episodes for the last few weeks, because I've been crying. But the you know, lining up there at AvSpecs at the moment, they've got things like the Tony, Japanese fighter, and there's across at Pioneer, there's the Hornet project, De Havilland Hornet, or Sea Hornet, I should say. That should excite you.
Listen, I haven't got long. It's about The Aviation Historian, the magazine the mainstream monthlies don't want you to know about. It's a new compact format quarterly journal, exploring the less well-known paths of flying history. It's created by experienced, award-winning former Aeroplane magazine editors Mick Oakey and Nick Stroud. It's not in the shops, but you can get it via the website, theaviationhistorian.com.
Oi, we know you're in there!
They're coming for me. I've got to go. Remember, The Aviation Historian.
And Dave, one of the things I noticed a month or two back, you went on a little trip. You flew in some pretty impressive historical aircraft, didn't you? Saw some great photos.
Down at Wanaka. Yeah. I went down to Warbirds over Wanaka, which is the first time I've been down there since 2006, so it's pretty damn exciting to get down there again, because it's one of the big air shows. It's apparently the biggest in the Southern Hemisphere for warbirds, for a warbird air show, and for any air show, it is one of the biggest. I had the privilege and absolute surprise to get asked to go up in the De Havilland Rapide, and my friend Adam Butcher was the pilot, and Brian Greenwood just happened to see me. He's a member of WANS, and said, hey, do you want to come up with us? We've got a spare seat. And I was like, fantastic. So we went up in this De Havilland Rapide, and right next to us in formation was a Fox Moth and a Stagger Wing, and we're flying over Lake Wanaka, which is the most stunning, beautiful countryside around this lake. And, you know, it was just this magic moment. It really was. And that was literally within the first hour that I'd arrived at Wanaka. And then that evening, Bevan Jews took me up in his Chipmunk as well, which was fantastic, because I hadn't been in his Chipmunk before. And he said, oh, do you want to come up? And we did a bit of a flight again around much the same area over the lake, but it was just with the sun going down at that stage, so it was just beautiful. Another really calm flight and amazing scenery, and it was just incredible.
Yeah, there's some great photos, so you know, maybe we can include one or two of those in the show notes. Were you there when there was the unfortunate incident with the Yak 3?
It happened right in front of me, actually. It was the most unusual set of circumstances, and I wouldn't want to comment on who's at fault.
Gratefully, he was he walked away from it, didn't he? Though that airframe was pretty badly bashed up. Is there any news on whether it will get back to flying status?
From what I've heard, it's already underway to be restored, but I don't know if that's true. It's but then I talked with a mate, Daniel Frew, who actually rebuilt the other Yak that was flying there, which is the famous Yak Full Noise that went to Reno last year. He rebuilt that with his uncle, Graham Frew, because they had bought it after it had crashed at Reno. And he actually said the Yak is, like most Russian things, is actually much easier to rebuild the structure than anything British or American. He said it. He said it should be rebuildable.
Dave, then putting you on the spot a bit, have you got a favourite aircraft? Is there something favourite that Dave Homewood loves?
I can never pin it down to one. I have probably four or five that I could give you, and one or two of them would be quite obvious, like the Corsair and the Kitty Hawk and the Spitfire. I love, just absolutely love them. But in terms of the other two favourites would be the Lockheed Hudson, mainly because I have been able to talk to a lot of the guys who worked on them and who flew them, and get their stories recorded for a book project that I've been working on for years. And I fell in love with the aircraft. I think they're brilliant. And the other one is the Vickers Wildebeest, or Vincent. Basically the same aircraft. They were just in different roles, so they got different names. That's a big, huge, single-engine biplane, very similar size and layout, and even the same engine as a Swordfish. We had them here in New Zealand from 36 through till the end of the war, and they were like a big tiger moth to fly, according to the pilots. They love flying them. They filled so many roles at the beginning of the war, before we got things like, you know, Hudsons and stuff. They were our main defense. They were reconnaissance bombers. They were like a transport aircraft. They even transported ministers from town to town, and them, you know, MPs. And, they did aerial surveying and photography and, all sorts of things. Anything that, you know, they could think of, because we didn't have a very big air force before the war, and it was only really about sort of 1941 that it started to expand properly. Apart from trainers, there was a lot of trainers, but because New Zealand was training guys for the RAF, so there's lots of trainers. The Vickers Wildebeest and Vincent is, to me, it's brilliant, because again, a lot of those guys that were on the Hudsons that I talked to, they had originally been on the Vickers biplanes, and so getting all those stories and hearing about them, and the Blackburn Baffin was another one that they flew as well in the same role, and that's a pretty cool aircraft as well, and nobody knows about it. There's only one left in the world, and that's up in just north of Auckland. It's being rebuilt, and there's only one Vickers Vincent in the world, and it's at the same place. They're both owned by Don Sabritsky and Steve Sabritsky, father and son, and so we're very fortunate to have them here. And there's a wildebeest in partial state of being restored at Wigram in Christchurch, but that's been put on hold at the moment. So
wow, so interesting list, Dave. An interesting list. And one of the things you know, as we've sort of corresponded and contacted each other over the past few years, you've talked about the UK and how spoilt we are, but just describing some of those aircraft there, I think the tables are turned a bit. Looking forwards, you very kindly were instrumental in making me pull a finger out and get the flight audio and video group set up on Facebook. We share lots of different episodes of programs from around the world, really. I mean, it's an amazing sector to be a part of, and your contributions highly valued. What sort of things do you want to hear more about? Do you want to see more of in the coming years?
I don't really know the answer to that, because I just like the variety of stuff that comes up on that page. It's amazing that, and it's good that other people, I mean, for a long time it's just been you and me posting there, but there's other people starting to post now.
They're chipping in.
I think all the podcasters out there who are doing their own aviation podcast should get on there and start posting their episodes every time they put one out. You know, so they need to build the crowd a bit, you know. So, but you know, there's, I think it was a really good move that you made when you changed it from just audio to be audio and video, because videos just attract people like flies to a picnic sort of thing. You know, everyone wants to come and have a look. So there's some amazing stuff that comes up.
Got some more plans for the group, maybe in a month or two's time. But before we sign off, any plans to travel outside of New Zealand?
I'd love to. I really would like to get to England next year if possible, because I'd love to get to the D-Day 75th anniversary celebrations that are going to be happening in England and France. It certainly won't happen this year, that I won't be getting anywhere. But unfortunately, I'm pretty skint. I don't have a lot of money, so I've got to find a scheme to get me over there. But
yeah.
I mean, one thing with...
Well, anyone out there who can maybe support Dave in that, do you have anything that supports the show? Are there any ways of supporting Wings Over New Zealand financially? What can people do to help ease the burden? As I know, it can be quite a challenge supporting this sort of initiative.
Every now and then people will donate a bit of money, but there's nothing like... I've never started charging for episodes or anything like that, because I don't think people would buy them, honestly. But
I don't know, have you ever thought about things like the Fleet Air Arm project you talked about, releasing them as maybe audio books?
That's a possibility, and that's one of the reasons why the Fleet Air Arm one and the Mosquito one, and I've got a Corsair project. I've also got an Iroquois helicopter project. All the stuff sitting there building up as I record stuff, and I've been holding them back to think of ways that maybe I can actually make some money off them as well when they release. So if anyone has some good suggestions, and I mean, I'm not too... one of the things, Peter, that I've actually thought about is some of the podcasts nowadays, not so much the aviation podcast, but other podcasts, they'll keep releasing the free ones, but they'll have like a club where there's just members only ones, and they pay in a small...
Patreon, I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah, and really? I wouldn't mind doing that, but I just need to get some more episodes ready to do that. So every time I sort of do an episode, I put it straight out, and I think I should sort of build some up and get a little bank of good episodes that might attract people to actually put some money in their pocket and actually pay for these things. But
well, let's get people to come on over to you. Where can people find out about Wings Over New Zealand, the Cambridge Forum, Warbird Radio? Where can we find out about all of these?
Well, if you just Google Wings Over New Zealand, it will come up. In fact, if you just Googled anything with New Zealand aviation, it seems to come up at the top of Google these days. So Wings Over New Zealand Forum is at http://rnzaf, which is short for Royal New Zealand Air Force, .proboards.com. So it's a bit complex. And
we'll put a link in the show notes, to that. You've also got presence elsewhere, haven't you, on social media?
Yeah, well, look up the Wings Over New Zealand show on Facebook and you'll find our page there, and join there and you'll get lots of extra content and news through that. The Wings Over Cambridge site, if you're interested in my actual website that this all spun off from, is at www.cambridgeairforce.org.nz, and the Wings Over New Zealand show is actually on that site. You'll find a link to it on the front page of Wings Over Cambridge. And on the Facebook page, there's quite a few little film clips that I've made at various air shows and around the place. They're not particularly great, but they're films of New Zealand aviation. And also, I have a YouTube channel where I've got a few Wings Over New Zealand films. If you're on the actual Wings Over New Zealand show page, there's an actual separate page within that, which is all movies. So there's actually video interviews with some of our forum meet speakers, and there's one or two that I've taken the audio and added photographs, their photo presentation in, so it makes it into a film. And we've got audio and we've got video, and I'd like to do more video, but it just takes so long to get anything done. But yeah, that's just another little facet there is the film stuff.
Right. And can we find Courage and Valour there as well?
Courage and Valour is at www.newzealandersatwar.com.
Right, okay. And again, we'll put links to all of these in the show notes.
Yeah.
Dave, fascinating talk. Thank you very much for talking to us. It's mid-late morning here. I know it's getting late for you over in New Zealand, so I really appreciate your time.
No problem, and thank you to you, Peter, and to your co-hosts for what you do and bringing us the British stories. I look forward to every episode that you put out, because it's always interesting to hear what's going on on the other side of the world. Exactly how you feel about hearing my episodes, I guess. I'd really love to hear a bit more of the warbird scene over there, and I think that, you know, England needs a warbird podcast. So
yeah, it probably does. Yeah. It probably does. But like you, I have more projects than the ability to pull together.
Exactly. But if somebody out there who is into the British warbirds and the air show scene and they want to start a podcast, I'm sure that Peter and I will be able to give you some great tips on how to do it.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that. A recent guest on this show may or may not potentially do something with us, but we'll see about that.
Just with the British warbird scene and the amazing museums that you've got there and, you know, your air shows and that. Back in 2015, with the Wings Over New Zealand show, I went to Australia, did a tour there with James Keightley, and it was called Wings Over Australia. It was a sub-series within Wings Over New Zealand. And I went around collections of aircraft. I went to airfields. I went to the Tamora Air Show, Warbirds Down Under, it's called. Went to museums and met really interesting people who are involved in aviation over there and interviewed lots and lots of people and did about, I think it was 25 episodes, around about 25 episodes for Wings Over Australia. I would absolutely love to do that Wings Over Britain. I'd love to go to England and probably Scotland if I can afford to get there as well. I'd love to go and visit your museums and interview museum people. I'd love to visit your collections and talk to warbird people, and I'd love to go to things like the Hawker Restorations and Battle of Britain Memorial Flight and East Kirkby and stuff like that. I'd love to do a series there where I'm meeting people all around your country and recording their stories and putting that out to the world as well. That's what I'd like to do next year. If I can possibly get to Britain, I will do that as best I can, and I'll probably need some help to do that. If there's any sponsors or any people with ideas of how to make it happen, and anyone who has a couch to sleep on or things like that, it'd be great.
Dave, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really enjoyed it. Great to catch up.
No worries at all.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
There you go, Dave, one of the nicest guys in the sector. That's about it for today's episode. We would like to thank White Hearts and, of course, Peter Dixon for their contributions to the show. That's the music from White Hearts and the voiceovers from Peter Dixon. You can find Extended on all the major podcast playing platforms. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, and please do ask before using anything you hear. The program is produced with a Creative Commons license. And so, with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. And remember, stay tuned into this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The cockpit's very cramped, you've got leg restraints on, you're sat on a seat that's got explosives in it.
Just taking me on the trip of a lifetime in a F-18F Super Hornet.
Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need.
is XTP Media.